Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, excessive police force and how to make lasting reforms proved to be a difficult conversation for Boulder City Council last night. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then we'll hear from a local group raising funds to send PPE and other needed supplies to the Navajo Nation. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we'll hear from Professor Angela Davis on Policing the Black Man. That's the title of her book that came out just over a year ago. With so many conversations happening about defunding the police, we'll revisit this conversation that took place on Pacifica Radio's Law and Disorder. Then at 8:55, we'll bring you a debate between two candidates in the Boulder County Commissioner Democratic primary, Jonathan Singer and Martha Luachimine. At 9:30, Shauna's in for the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
Last night, a vigil was held in Denver's Civic Center Park honoring George Floyd, the man who was killed by police in Minneapolis about 2 weeks ago. Floyd was laid to rest in his hometown of Houston yesterday. His death has sparked protests against racism and police brutality in the U.S. and around the world. The Denverite reports that the vigil began with a guided meditation, which set the tone to be introspective and to release frustration and anger. And while the vigil was for Floyd, those who addressed the crowd also eulogized Ahmaud Arbery, who was murdered while jogging in Georgia, and Breonna Taylor, who was killed by police in Louisville, Kentucky. Those attending the vigil in Denver lighted candles as the sun set and were silent for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, the length of time that a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on Floyd's neck on May 25th. On Tuesday, the Aurora Police Department changed policies in response to ongoing protests in the city and across the country. Officers in Aurora are now banned from holds that pressure the carotid arteries in a person's neck. The Denver Post reports that other changes include the requirement that police have a duty to intervene when another officer is violating a department policy, and officers involved in a violent conflict will be replaced with those who are fresh and should be less emotionally involved and able to de-escalate the situation. An additional policy change arises directly from police conduct during their encounter with Elijah McClain, in which they used a chokehold on him. He died afterwards. A caller had reported him as acting suspiciously after he was seen walking down the street while wearing a mask. Now, officers will need to stand back and observe a person and then make the judgment call whether further engagement is warranted, according to Interim Police Chief Vanessa Wilson. The new directives in Aurora take effect immediately and follow new policies announced Sunday by the Denver police in wake of the mass community protests. In related news, a panel of Aurora city lawmakers sent a letter yesterday to City Manager Jim Twombly asking for an independent third-party investigation into the death of Elijah McClain. The Sentinel reports that the three council members who wrote the letter said that they have watched the events over the last several days, and it has become clear that the public trust has eroded. They said it is their responsibility to take the first step to see that it is restored, and they want more than the investigation already underway because it is being conducted by a person who has decades-long relationship with law enforcement. It is not clear whether the city manager will honor the request for a different investigator. District Attorney Dave Young, who initially reviewed the investigation into the death of Elijah McClain, said he will not reopen the matter, despite hundreds of thousands of signatures on a petition asking just for that. He told KDVR that his office doesn't base filing decisions on signatures, but only on evidence and what they can prove. The fire chief in Lyons has resigned after posting inflammatory comments about racial justice protesters in Denver. The NAACP began an investigation last Friday into a post made by Chief J.J. Hoffman in May in response to someone's remark about protesters. That post said that the Denver police should have the fire department use a 2.5-inch line to wash all the human trash into the gutter. Hoffman responded with a remark saying, quote, "Ha ha, if I was down there, I definitely would open up with our high-pressure bumper turret and have some fun," unquote. The NAACP said in a release that State Representative Jonathan Singer, a member of the Boulder County branch, filed a formal complaint asking that it launch an investigation into Hoffman's remarks. Hoffman served as Lions fire chief for the past 11 years. An announcement of his resignation was made on the Lions Fire Protection District website. Lawmakers in the Colorado Senate have given final approval to a measure that would expand access to more affordable health insurance options for thousands of families in the state at a time when many Colorado families are struggling. According to a release from Healthier Colorado, Senate Bill 215 would continue Colorado's successful reinsurance program, as well as expand access to more affordable health insurance for thousands of Coloradans who purchase their insurance on the individual marketplace. The proposal would continue a federal fee on insurance companies at the state level that is set to expire. It would not cost the state any money. Healthier Colorado says that the reinsurance program has lowered premiums on the individual markets. Also, the bill would reduce insurance premiums for lower-income Coloradans who receive federal subsidies under the ACA. The bill was approved on a vote of 19-15 and will now move to the Colorado House for consideration and is expected to be heard today in committee. Yesterday, leaders of the Boulder Valley School District committed to having a broader conversation about police in schools. However, the Daily Camera reports that they did not agree to a call by community leaders to eliminate the school resource officer program. The NAACP is leading a local effort to remove police from Boulder Valley schools, similar to an effort underway in the Denver Public Schools amid nationwide protests and outcry over police brutality. Boulder Valley Superintendent Rob Anderson urged the board to begin a thoughtful conversation with the community on the issue of police in schools, saying students, parents, teachers, and school administrators need to be included. He plans to present a process and timeline to the school board at its June 23rd meeting. Today and tomorrow we'll see sunny skies with highs today in the upper 70s and tomorrow in the mid-80s. Right now it's about 54. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Like communities across the country, Boulder is grappling with police reform following the death of George Floyd at the hands of a police officer in Minnesota. Boulder City Council took up the topic last night. KGNU's Ross Brown has more.
An effort to defund and reform the police is gaining momentum in the U.S. following the death of George Floyd, a black man who died during an arrest after a white policeman knelt on his neck for more than 8 minutes. Critics say police tactics have become militarized, and Boulder's new police chief, Maris Harold, says it's because training for police officers has been the same for decades.
What this continuum tells cops and trains cops is, as somebody escalates, they escalate. As the subject escalates again, they escalate. The only way to come back down is for the subject to de-escalate. And it's been devastating in policing for 30 years.
Harold was previously the University of Cincinnati police chief and told Boulder City Council she had firsthand experience with outdated training.
Let me give you an example. My whole career, I would sit in roll calls and the police sergeant would tell me, make sure you and your partner go home safe at night. Make sure you and your partner go home safe at night. This is still being said across this country to police officers. SWAT commanders in this country say this: make sure you will not have one person die during this incident. Now, that might seem nuanced to everybody, but think about that, the different messaging and the different training that has to accompany that message. It is extremely important that we understand that. And so if you have a whole use of force model that at every junction of the incident, you are concerned about making sure everyone goes home at night, well, that completely changes the paradigm.
Since the Minnesota incident, it's been revealed that the officers involved had numerous complaints against them and even questionable credentials prior to joining the police force. Councilmember Junie Joseph asked Harold if she could guarantee that would not happen in Boulder.
If it would be possible for Boulder PD to make a pledge not to hire a police officer who has been fired or who had had severe disciplinary misconduct.
If we had a candidate that had serious problems in the background, no, I would not be interested in hiring that person. And I can tell you, I would not hire that person.
Since the death of George Floyd, some have charged there is systematic racism among police officers, while others believe it's just a few bad apples. Joseph Press Police Chief Harold on getting to the bottom of police misconduct.
I would imagine most police officers, when they go into that field, they go in it with good intentions. And the ones who turned, you know, for lack of a better term, bad, it could be so many different factors, whether it's stress or you know, things that happen, confrontations. So how do we protect these officers? And as a layperson, I wonder whether we have a system of psychological evaluation to make sure, again, that the good police officers are being protected and the bad ones are being supported so that they don't turn bad.
Junie, that's such an excellent observation, and I can tell you why. How many years ago has this been? President Barack Obama's 21st Century Task Force, and one of the pillars was officer wellness. And it's overlooked, and we have to do a better job with officer wellness. And I think Boulder Police Department has a really robust response, but it is so overlooked in this country.
Boulder has overhauled its police oversight policies in the past year to include hiring a full-time independent police monitor to review investigations of misconduct and research policies that need reform. At the same time, Harold said transformative changes will be a heavy lift and could take 2 years. She'd like to see more officers act as ambassadors and engage with the community.
I like police officers on foot. I like them on bikes. I like them on segways, because it does make the community feel safer and they feel part of that community. So those are really good, but unfortunately, I don't believe that putting 100 cops on bikes is going to get us to the root issues of why this continues to happen in this country.
Early in the meeting last night, the city manager advised council that economic damage to the city's budget from COVID-19 would make it difficult to change police department funding for 2020 and recommended council take that up in 2021. Shortly thereafter, a caravan of motorists took to the streets to drive by council members' homes honking, part of a demonstration effort to defund police as cities grapple with racial justice. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
It is 16 minutes past 8 o'clock. The Navajo Nation has been devastated by the coronavirus pandemic. New York State, which has had a lot of media attention because of its coronavirus rates, that has an infection rate of 1.9%. To put that into context, the Navajo Nation has an infection rate of more than 3.4% and more than 6,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. This is according to the Navajo Nation Department of Health. And they have gotten little to no help from the federal government. Well, last week we brought you an interview with Dr. Maria Michael, who was mobilising to help the Navajo Nation, or the Diné, as well as the Hopi. There are lots of local organisations that are working to help Native communities. This morning we'll hear from another group that is also mobilising to get donations. I spoke with the group's organiser, Denise Luttrell.
I actually spent quite a bit of time down in the Navajo Nation in the early 90s. With a traditional support caravan, and we would take supplies down every November, and we would take them deep into the nation, to the remote households, and deliver supplies there. And so I got to see firsthand how people were living, and I remember well this one woman, 80 years old, lived by herself 15 miles, which translates to about an hour and a half if the roads are not muddy, from pretty much any place else. And she didn't have electricity. She didn't have running water. She had a water tank that she would use very sparingly. And she depended on some of the younger people to help her out with firewood and such. But she raised sheep, and she used every part of them. She ate them. She used their wool to make weavings, and that was her source of income. I'm sure that things have not changed at all since then. And it's very difficult for them. Many of these elders don't have vehicles, so they really are out there on their own. And when times get hard, they absolutely depend on the people that can get there with their vehicles and lend a hand.
The existing inequities have really come, are really being magnified right now with the COVID-19 pandemic, and it has been well documented how the federal response has been woefully inadequate, and never more so than with tribal nations who have received little, if any, help from the federal government. And there were some reports of body bags being shipped instead of PPE that had been requested. And so give us a sense of how tribal governments, and particularly the health services on the reservations, are really being overwhelmed right now by what's happening.
Yes. Their health services are bare bones as it is because of the lack of funding and support from the federal government. And just to give you an idea of how much they're lacking, the Navajo Nation government itself has a GoFundMe page for donations.
I can't imagine another local government, say Boulder County or the city and county of Denver or the state of Colorado, creating a GoFundMe to be able to provide essential services for their citizens.
Yes, I don't think most people really have a sense of exactly how sparse any kind of resources are for the people down there. And for them to go someplace where they can buy resources is generally requires the help of other people, requires a full day, if not multiple day trip. And Jake Toledos, who we've been working with down there, has kind of turned himself into a one-man distribution network. And he was having a lot of trouble finding any groceries anywhere close to the Navajo Nation, and in fact was driving into Colorado to purchase goods.
Well, in addition to Jake, I know you're working with other Diné community organizers who are helping distribute things that you're collecting here. So I know that you have a GoFundMe page as well for money so you can buy things, but there are also, I think, some drop-off locations that people can donate. I know you're taking both material and monetary donations. Give people a sense of how they can help.
Yes. So on our GoFundMe page, we have a list of items that have been requested, and we're doing this kind of a two-phase project where we're trying to supply both immediate needs in terms of food and sanitation supplies, produce, meat, and some non-perishables. But we're also working with some groups that are trying to set up small farming operations. And we really are interested in helping long-term sustainability goals. And these people are working on food sovereignty and trying to create some sustainability so as not to depend on outside entities for their food. And so we're working hard to try and get things such as hoop houses, which we've secured a good donation for, rototillers, and especially water catchment systems, because water is one of the biggest issues on the Navajo Reservation. Navajo Nation, I'm sorry. And so I myself am willing to pick up donations in the neighborhood. I live up above Jamestown, and people are welcome to drop stuff off at my house, but I understand for people down in the Boulder, Denver area, that's a long way. So I'm willing to come and pick stuff up down below. Also in Jamestown, at the Jamestown Mercantile, they're accepting drop-offs. And all the information, my contact information, is on the GoFundMe page at Navajo Nation COVID-19 Supply Run.
This is not something that's going to go away when the rest of the country maybe gets back to, well, I don't even want to use the word normal, but, because of the existing issues facing the Navajo Nation. And so is there a way to have this as long-term support? I guess you've already answered that by, the items that you're trying to donate is to try to create, resilience, I suppose, and to offer people, more sustainable practices down there. given that they've been completely let down by any federal aid at all. So, you know, just maybe, Denise, if you want to remind people that this isn't a short term issue that people are facing there, and that we need to really remember this long after our personal lives have maybe gotten back to some level of normality amidst all of this.
Yes, this is something that's going to take years and likely generations. But I think that the current climate is raising people's awareness across the board about inequities in our country. And one of the things that we have in mind when we go down there is to create some contacts, some relationships, so that we can come back here and hopefully connect people from this area who have resources and are wanting to help out and create long-term relationships with the people down there and the communities down there. And that would be our overarching goal in the long term.
That's Denise Luttrell, and you can find out more how to connect with her to donate supplies or funds through the GoFundMe page. Just search for Navajo Nation COVID-19 Supply Run. That's Navajo Nation COVID-19 Supply Run. It is 8:25, and it's time now for Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. There are bills kicking around Congress right now about police reform on both the national and state levels. One of them comes from Colorado, a civil rights and police reform bill by Congressman Jason Crow, which will take center stage at a hearing on racial profiling and police brutality. The bill is named after George Floyd. Crow actually began working on it months ago with the mother of Elijah McClain, an unarmed black man killed by police in Aurora. The legislation aims to diversify police forces and raise standards and training that minimize the use of force. It also creates a federal task force to investigate police misconduct and sets up a nationwide database to track stops by police and how race plays a role in them. It provides the Department of Justice with $25 million to enforce federal civil rights legislation. Crow's goal is to rebuild trust between police and the communities. Quote, "We have to change the mentality around policing in America. For a very long time, the mentality has been, quote, what is lawful? What is legal? What is that line up to which you can go, close quote. But we have to change that, so what it becomes instead is not what is the line that I can't cross to what is actually appropriate for this situation. What is going to help build trust? What's going to help resolve the situation, quote, said Crow. Crow's bill would also provide a medallion for survivors of law enforcement officers killed in the line of duty. He has more than 80 co-sponsors, so far none of them Republican, but Republicans are getting on board with some of the police reform bills at both the state and national levels. And at the Colorado Capitol, Senate Bill 217 would require all police officers to use body cameras, outlaw chokeholds when arrests are being made, and prohibit police departments from hiring officers who have been convicted of a violent crime or inappropriate use of force. The bill also requires officers to intervene when another officer is using inappropriate force. Quote, Coloradans across the state are demanding accountability, transparency, and increased integrity from our law enforcement officers, said Senate President Leroy Garcia, Democrat of Pueblo, during the bill's first hearing. Quote, we have heard them, and it is time for us to act in a meaningful way. They're crying out for us to do something, said the bill sponsor Rhonda Fields from Aurora. This is a defining moment for our nation. Nobody should have to die in custody at the hands of police. That's just not the order of policing. If you have thoughts on Jason Crow's policing bill in the U.S. House or Colorado Senate Bill 217, you can contact your representatives and senators at the state and national level. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to hear Angela Davis talking about her latest book, Policing the Black Man. That's at 8:35. Next, though, it's time for Naturally.
Hello, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. To talk about one of the plants that I really do believe can help save the planet, and that is hemp. Hemp is also known as Cannabis sativa or Cannabis indica. It is an annual member of the Cannabaceae family, which interestingly enough, there's only one other member of this family, and that is hops. Cannabis is believed to be a native to Asia. And when we talk about hemp, we're not talking about, you know, high THC type of cannabis. We're talking about a plant that has served humankind for over 10,000 years. The Latin name sativa in the species name means with a long history of cultivation. And Carl Sagan, who supposedly was a cannabis user, believed that cannabis truly is one of the world's oldest cultivated plants. So cannabis seeds were brought to America by the Pilgrims in 1632. And by 1850, it was one of America's largest crops, third to be exact. During the late 19th century, it was used by many physicians as a medicine for everything from weight loss, migraines, coughing, withdrawal of opiate and alcohol addiction. But in 1937, the Harrison Drug Act passed and cannabis was made illegal. And it was actually reinstated in 1943 with a campaign called Hemp for Victory. It was a campaign to empower United States troops to rely on American resources for their military needs. And so cannabis was once again grown to make fiber for soldiers' uniforms, to make rope, and to make sails for sailing ships. And then later on, when it was found that it really competed with a lot of other industries, such as the logging and forestry industries, and also with the chemical companies that were introducing new modern fabrics like nylon, it became illegal again. So when I think about plants that are useful, that could help humanity reduce the amount of pollution, I think of hemp first. Another thing is that Henry Ford grew hemp to show that fuel for automobiles and even airplanes could be sustainable and renewable. Hemp was one of the plants that he grew. So those are just some of the environmental things. If we were to use hemp to make paper, to make fuel, to make fabric, it would greatly reduce the amount of chemicals that were needed. It takes years, sometimes decades, for trees to grow. But cannabis is renewable every 3 to 4 months and can grow as tall as a tree in that time. It's time to rethink this plant that God has given us that could do so much healing for a much maligned planet. So when I think of useful plants that can help heal the earth, I think of cannabis. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.